Party like it's 1860? That's what some South Carolinians will be doing tonight in Charleston at the Secession Ball, marking the 150th anniversary of the state's secession from the Union, December 20th, 1860. South Carolina's secession set the stage for the Civil War and the loss of more than 600,000 lives. At tonight's ball, sponsored by the Confederate Heritage Trust, guests in period costumes will watch a reenactment of the signing of the Ordinance of Secession. The NAACP plans to protest, but the organizers defend the event, saying they're not trying to perpetuate slavery or glorify the Civil War. Why do we know all this? Well, because we're reading the New York Times online series, Disunion. There's a link at hereandnow.org. Adam Goodhart is one of the main contributors. He joins us from NPR in Washington. And Adam, your thoughts first about how this day is resonating in South Carolina.
Well, I think that generation after generation has found its own meaning for the Civil War. I think in the Civil Rights era, that idea of states' rights very much resonated with people who were opposed to black voting rights and to integration. And I think today, that idea of states' rights resonates again when people talk about the Obama health plan or tax reform. I think people sort of hearken back to the days when states resisted the authority of the federal government.
Well, it's interesting that you note that, because other people would say and have said, well, it's also a black president, you know, proposing some of those things. So just again, what was secession about? Was it about states' rights, or was it about preserving slavery, or a little bit of both?
Well, that's the thing. It's become popular, and really ever since the end of the war, I think people have tried to rewrite history and say that it really wasn't about slavery at all, and this phrase, states' rights, has been picked up. But actually, if you go back and you read what people were saying at the time, they were very explicit. They were very outspoken about why they were seceding. They felt they needed to explain it to the world. And in fact, one of the first things that the South Carolina Secession Convention delegates did was they issued a declaration of causes, sort of like the Declaration of Independence issued in 1776. It really has to do entirely with slavery. They use the word slavery and slaveholding over and over again in this document. And they say, those states have assumed the right of deciding upon the propriety of our domestic institutions and have denied the rights of property established in 15 of the states and recognized by the Constitution. Of course, they mean the right to own slaves. Then they say they have denounced as sinful the institution of slavery. They have permitted the open establishment among them of societies whose avowed object is to disturb the peace and elloin the property of the citizens of other states. Of course, they're referring there to the abolitionists in the North. They continue, they have encouraged and assisted thousands of our slaves to leave their homes, and those who remain have been incited by emissaries, books, and pictures to servile insurrection. That's the idea that slaves would be rising up to murder their masters, as in Nat Turner's Rebellion. And then finally, a geographical line has been drawn across the Union, and all the states north of that line have united in the election of a man, Abraham Lincoln, to the high office of President of the United States, whose opinions and purposes are hostile to slavery. He is to be entrusted with the administration of the common government because he has declared that government cannot endure half slave, half free, and that the public mind must rest in the belief that slavery is in the course of ultimate extinction.
Well, 11 states eventually seceded, formed the Confederate States of America. And if you look at the Sons of Confederate Veterans website today, they actually quote Abraham Lincoln from a speech he gave years earlier before secession in 1848. Here's what he said in part. Any people anywhere being inclined and having the power have the right to rise up and shake off the existing government and form a new one that suits them better. He goes on and talks more about how people have this right. Did that speech come to haunt Abraham Lincoln later when South Carolina did just that?
Well, I think that to some extent those were unfortunate words of Lincoln's. Of course, it was a very old tradition in America, going back to Thomas Jefferson, who said that the tree of liberty must be watered afresh in each generation with the blood of tyrants. So Americans have definitely clung fast to this idea of revolution. But we've also clung fast to the idea of the rule of law, to the idea of majority rule. And so I think that a lot of people in the North recognized, and I think it's hard to deny today, that secession is ultimately a form of anarchy. When Lincoln said that really the future of democracy as a system on Earth, not simply in the United States, but on Earth, depended on the suppression of the doctrine of secession. I think he was thinking about that.
Well, and do you see any comparison to today? In 2009, Texas Governor Rick Perry said his state would secede if Washington continued to thumb its nose at the American people. The Tea Party movement, rails against what it calls a government overreach into the lives of American people.
Well, Americans have been very ambivalent about big government from the beginning, really. And I think, though, that people today, I don't think that Rick Perry was probably terribly serious talking about Texas secession. I'd hope that others who talk about secession or revolution today are being more rhetorical than literal. And I think that people throughout American history have sort of used it as a club to menace the federal government when they're really sort of trying to extract concessions, which in fact was what a lot of people in 1860 thought. A lot of people, especially in the North, thought, well, the South sort of is constantly threatening secession, and they're really not going to follow through on this. We'll have to make some concessions to them, as we've done in the past, and then we'll be able to reunite the family and keep going. And on the other hand, people in the South really believed they would simply be allowed to go in peace by the North. They didn't think that the North was willing to fight. In fact, right after this secession ordinance was proclaimed, a former United States senator stood up in front of a cheering crowd in Charleston, and he promised to drink all the blood spilled in the conflict over secession. In other words, he didn't think it would be much more than a teaspoonful, and history proved him sadly wrong.
Very wrong. That's Adam Goodhart. We'll link you to his pieces about the Civil War for the New York Times online series Disunion at hereandnow.org. Adam's upcoming book, by the way, is 1861, The Civil War Awakening. Looking forward to that. Adam, thank you as always.
Thank you, Robin.